Blog Talk Radio.
General quarters. Security condition 3.
GQ. Security 3, sir. General quarters 3. Intruder alert. GQ 3. Intruder alert.
Hey, good evening. Welcome once again to Madame Perry's Salon. I am your host, groove mistress, and cruise director, Madame Perry, also known as Jennifer Perry or Jennifer Maudette, J Mod. Thank you so much. Hey, you know, I was telling you, Sunday night we had a special edition because we don't usually broadcast Sundays, especially not at 9 o'clock, but we had a special edition Sunday night, and it's gotten a lot of listens, a lot of downloads and comments. It was, the guest was Anthony J. Sharp. He's a musician and an actor. He's done a lot of TV, and he's done film, but most people in America know him from the series Miss Fisher's Murder Mysteries. Which takes place in, the series takes place in Australia in the 1920s, you know, the roaring 20s when, you know, people were loose and having a good time. And he plays Cecil, one of the cab drivers that Miss Fisher hires him and his friend to help her solve murder. She's a lady detective. So, yeah, that was a lot of fun, and he's going to be coming back soon because we just didn't get to finish. Also, recently, don't forget, Kazem Sultan is still on tour. He was on recently, but, you know, he just finished the tour with Todd Rundgren, Shiver Rock, and over the White Knight tour. And then after the Todd show, we were hanging out, and he showed me his calendar on his phone. He goes, okay, let's see, and then I'll be back in Atlanta on the 23rd of July with Don Felder. So he's busy. So if you're, it's the REO Speedwagon and Styx tour, but it has Don Felder, and Kazem is playing bass for that. But he also did his solo album. It's called Bootleg. This, I think, is his fourth solo release, but his solo is called Bootleg. Get that. Also, we had two things I want to mention about recent guests. Denny Tedesco, whose dad, Tommy Tedesco, was one of the Wrecking Crew, you know, the musicians from the 50s, 60s, and 70s that pretty much, there were studio musicians in L.A. that pretty much did everything you've ever heard for other people, like Pet Sounds, they played for the Association, Frank Sinatra, and so you might have thought it was some other band, but it's actually Carole Kaye and Hal Blaine and Earl Palmer and those folks. But he was talking about the Wrecking Crew documentary, and it's still available. Just go to WreckingCrewFilm.com, and check that out if you want to get a copy of it. And Joe Vitale, drummer, he was on too, right? I think just the week after Denny Tedesco. Joe Vitale has played for years with people like Ted Nugent, mostly with Joe Walsh. He's mainly a Jay Walsh guy. And I did not realize that he played the drummer in the band Ricky and the Flash, Meryl Streep. But his book is great. It's all kind of backstage stories. Some of the stories he told about being on the road with Joe Walsh and some of the little tricks they used to play. I guess when you get so bored, I'm not going to say that they were defacing art in hotels, fancy art, but I think they just added their own touch to it. But get that. Joe Vitale is great. And coming up soon, this is going to be all-star stuff. Tomorrow night, Bruce Sedano, singer-songwriter. He's written hits for so many people. Jackson 5, Reba McEntire, Dolly Parton, and also his late wife, Donna Summer. He wrote several songs for her. The next night, Thursday, we've got David Fischoff. You don't know who David Fischoff is. I'm going to tell you right now. He's been a longtime agent, entertainment and sports agent. He has produced several TV shows, tours, like the Ringo Starr All-Star Band Tours. He created a couple of shows on VH1. And he's also the, he created the Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp. It's been going for a few years now. And that is where, you know, you go, and actual musicians that you've been listening to and been fan of for years are going to play with you. They're going to coach you. He's going to be talking about the one coming up in September, which is, I think it's called Hellbent for Hollywood is the theme. The main band is going to be Judas Priest, but also Rudy Sarzo. Remember Rudy, our friend who's been on here before, who was with Quiet Riot, and Ozzy, his brother Robert Sarzo, and several other musicians are going to be there. So we're looking forward to that. And the next week, Julie Slick, bassist and composer. I saw her. I met her after the Adrian Belew show. She plays in the Adrian Belew Power Trio. So we've got so much fun coming up and so much great. And listen, tonight, most of you listening in tonight already know what's coming up, and you're already excited. This is a band, I may not get the whole band in here because Madame Perry's Salon is like a little genie bottle, but I think I'll get at least one squeezed in here. This band is honest to God, American rock and roll. The name is Hollis Brown, named after a Bob Dylan song, The Ballad of Hollis Brown, which everyone knows. These guys, if you haven't heard of them, you've been under a rock, because these guys have been have several CDs. They've been working with films. They worked with Michael Keaton. They worked with Willem Dafoe and Matt Dillon, the film Bad Country, DirecTV's Kingdom, Showtime's Shameless, MTV's Real World. If you've got anything to do with any of that or seen any of these, you've heard their music. Also, they've done online ad campaigns, Abercrombie & Fitch. They've toured with America and Europe as headliners, but also supporting such bands as The Zombies, Jackie Green, Heartless Bastards, Rich Robinson from my hometown, Atlanta, Georgia, of the Black Crowes, Jesse Mellon. And I'll say, touring it with The Zombies, you know, a few weeks ago I had my friend Cindy DeSilva on. She wrote the book, The Odyssey and Oracle, The Zombies in Words and Music. She's also a manager for The Zombies and for this band tonight, and she's a good friend of Madame Perry's. I got to tell you, I feel so lucky. I know the coolest people in the world. So let's go ahead and open up the curtains, and the beaded curtains, and bring in here a very good-looking musician. Come on in. Come on into Madame Perry Salon, Mike, and introduce yourself
hello.
To the gang.
Hello, hello, hello. How are you?
I'm doing great. Help me make sure I got your name. Mike Montali?
Yeah, you got it.
Mike. Oh, good. All
You've
right.
You've been doing
so,
this a while. You know.
Tell us. Got a vowel at the end. It's Italian, and I've got some Sicilian in me, so I figured that might be close.
All right.
And let's see. So tell us about... you know, it's kind of dark here in Madame Perry's Salon, so I can't see if you brought anybody else in here with you yet. But tell us about
the band, the members.
Oh, okay.
Sure, yeah.
All right.
We're an American rock and roll band. We started in New York City in 2009. Me and lead guitar player John Bonilla kind of started the band in pretty much his dad's garage there in Queens, New York, where we started writing songs and listening to music and figuring out that, you know, we had a common dream of making music that might be heard by other people and liked by a large audience. So we started cranking away in Queens, New York in 2009, and we started sneaking into clubs and playing and building a little reputation around the city, and then we started venturing out, you know, weekend trips, Philadelphia, D.C., and all around the area. You know, by now, I guess it doesn't feel like it, but, some days it feels like it, but today, you know, I guess almost 8 or 9 years later, we've been doing over 100 shows every year the last couple of years in about 10 or 11 countries, and really spreading the word and having a good time. And it's a 5-piece rock band right now, and we got Andrew Zano is our drummer, amazing drummer. Adam Bach is the keyboard player and backing vocalist, great singer and great harmony man. And John's the guitar player, and Brian Courage is our bass player from Long Island, and we're doing it, you know.
Oh, Long Island. I spent a lot of time there. That's a fun place, and it's a great place. It seems to spawn a lot of musicians from there, Long Island. I don't know what y'all got in the water up there, but or what they have, but it's pretty good. Well, yeah, that's what
I think it's a bit
before.
Of depression,
exactly.
Maybe it's a bit of depression that spawns the talent, you know.
Well, whatever works, you know. You can just kind of let it take you under, or you can do something about it constructive. And
exactly. Well, you know something about that in Atlanta. A lot of great musicians from Atlanta, right? I mean,
yeah. Yeah, we do. We have a lot of great folks. And, you know, I think sometimes we tend to get a little spoiled in Atlanta. We get so used to it, all the people. And then you go somewhere else, you know, you realize how many people come from Atlanta, have fans all over the world or all over the country. And, yeah, we are very spoiled like that and fortunate. You know, so about what year did you this configuration, this particular group of Hollis Brown get started? How long ago? About what year?
Probably about two. Well, we put our first, you know, actual record out by the time we got the songs and we got a little following and we saved enough money to make a record and get it out the right way. It took us a few years. So our first record came out in 2013. And so I would say around that time was when we really started, you know, with the current lineup, really started grinding away. So I'd say about 4 years now.
Oh, my gosh, 4 years? And you guys have been, you've toured not only the U.S., but Europe?
Yeah, we've
Doesn't
done five European
Doesn't that feel a little
heady,
kind of like a fantasy life?
Yeah, it's kind of a whirlwind, you know, a lot of ups and downs and a lot of major shows in front of thousands of people and a lot of crappy shows in front of one person. You know what I mean? It's kind of been, it's been a roller coaster, but we're enjoying the ride, you know. So about 4 years, yeah, a lot has happened, you know. It's funny, you know, I'm always like the type of person who is looking ahead and kind of being hard on everybody around me and wanting to get to that next level. But when you hear something like you did, where you list off a bunch of the accomplishments and a bunch of places we've been and things we've done, you know, it doesn't feel like it even happened in a way.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. You know, so many people tend to, like you said, that you can have crappy gigs and you can have great gigs. And sometimes maybe you think it's you guys that are off, or sometimes it's maybe the crowd, either it's almost non-existent, or they're just not getting it or something, or they're just, there's all kinds of things that go on that, you know, people that haven't done it have no idea. And they're dealing with different club owners. Actually, here's an expression. Here's something I'll ask you about. Because, you know, Bill Maher, the comedian, TV show host.
Sure.
And, yeah, so, you know, he started as a stand-up comic, and I remember reading his first book a few years back, and this was back when I started playing out live, doing a jazz combo. And he said, so in the book was based on him and his friends, just with different names, out doing stand-up comedy and touring. And, you know, sometimes you get a great crowd, they love you, sometimes they don't, and you had to deal with club owners. And he says, people, and I think this goes through sometimes in music, not always, but sometimes. He said, you know, people that have never had to gig, never gigged for a living, and never had to deal with club owners, you know, they don't know what it's like. He says, so let me put it this way. Jack Ruby was a club owner, and I think they all see him as a role model.
Wow. Yeah, you know, it's you got to be a little crazy to get into the music business, that's for sure, you know. That's all I can say about it. But, you know, it's funny because we meet so many types of people, but a lot of the people we have met have been really, you know, good, honest, you know, people who just love and appreciate music. And so we've been kind of fortunate in that, not all the time, but a lot of it has been really supportive and really stuck by us, you know, like the first time coming through town when there's, you know, a few people there, and then you know, and then to come back, and then there's 100 or 200, and then it, and then more, and then it's kind of like, you know, you build something that really connects with people, and to be able to do it in all different cities, all different countries, and so it's pretty extraordinary when you think about it that way. You know, I mean, day to day as a musician, sometimes, you know, you don't think about it because you're just looking for the next release, whether it's artistically or financially or whatever, you know what I mean? But, you know, the people I've been fortunate enough to meet doing this, you know, it's unlike any other profession, and it's a really a unique kind of lifestyle, and I don't lose sight of that, you know.
So your band is named Hollis Brown after the song, the Dylan song. How did you, the Ballad of Hollis Brown, how did you, and why did you guys choose that? What does it mean to you?
Well, you know, at this point I almost don't know, but we were trying for so long. I remember just trying to figure out a freaking name for that we could all agree upon, and nobody could, you know, we had so many names, this and that and the other thing, and then one day we were just like, man, we just aren't getting anywhere, you know. Let's just try and see, like, okay, the Rolling Stones took their name from a Muddy Water song, so let's just maybe think of an artist that we want to identify with, and, you know, maybe pick a song from that artist that we can all agree on, and we'll get this show on the road so we can actually go out and book a show and stuff, you know. So we threw on all these artists, and Bob Dylan came up because, you know, we're a songwriting first kind of band. We really believe in songs being the start of where the sound comes from and how we connect with people, and how, you know. And so we thought, who's the best songwriter? Well, you know, hell, Bob Dylan, let's go with some Dylan songs. So we threw a bunch of those out, and then they couldn't agree on anything again. And then finally somebody said, well, how about Hollis Brown? You know, it's kind of, it's got a ring to it because we're a group, but it also gives us one identity. And also, you know, me and John, we went to high school right around Hollis, Queens. So we're like, you know, it's kind of a little something to it, or maybe we were all just, you know, tired and fat and frustrated, and just said, let's just pick something and stick with it. And, you know, it's for better or worse, you know, we stuck with it. And, you know, most of the time people think I'm Hollis Brown, or, you know, hey, people come up at the show and pass me notes and say, oh, hey, Hollis, you know, and I'm like, sure. Maybe I'll legally change my name.
All right. So right now on the air, he's changing his name. Give me a lawyer in here or something. So
yeah, Hollis Brown. It's got a ring to it. That's better than Montali.
No, it doesn't.
We play in Italy, though. Montali
now,
really helps us. We play in Italy, and Montali, that helps us along. Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, as I've learned from your bios, you and Jonathan Bonilla, lead guitar, and who writes with you, you're both second generation immigrants. Yours Italian American, his Puerto Rican American. I would imagine that when you do tour, I guess it is a big connection in other countries when you're playing. Let me ask you too. Why aren't you? You know, you've done so much with films. You have music placements in, you've got one in the worldwide trailer for Michael Keaton's film, The Founder. And then the thing with Willem Dafoe and Matt Dillon's Bad Country. Talk to me about that, getting placements and how that feels, and what's that like when you tell your friends, or does it make your parents, does it give them the ability to show the family, look, my son's got cred, he's out.
Right, yeah. Well, for us, it's kind of happened in all different types of ways. We just have been lucky enough to make some friends who have helped us along in some of them. And the other thing was also we scored a publishing admin deal about a year or so ago, and with Raleigh Music. And they have been really great and really helped the band get on, you know, champion the band and getting us on some TV and some film stuff. And we've just been hitting the ground, you know. And the thing about it is you never know who you're playing to. You know, like I said before, sometimes you show up in a show and there might be five people there. But you know what? One of those people a year later might come around with some opportunity. You know what I mean? It's kind of a strange thing to think about, you know, when you're in the moment and you see a handful of people in the crowd and you're just still giving it everything you have, that maybe, hey, a year and a half from now, this is going to land us a huge, you know, TV trailer or something. So it kind of, you know, it kind of just happens from word of mouth and from people discovering you and releasing music and keeping your name out there. And also we have a pretty good team around us who really believes in the band and has been pitching us the right way. And we do all types of weird, summits. We'll show up at, like, you know, they have, like, these events where a bunch of music supervisors go and talk about it, and we'll be, like, a featured artist and play our songs and meet people and network. So it's really about just getting out there and networking and meeting people and not being afraid to just, you know, give everything you have and play to anybody who wants to hear you and pass your stuff around, because spreading the word is what does it. And it's not, you know, you, as you know, in this industry, it's not like, you know, one plus two equals three. You know what I mean? Sometimes it takes the long way to get to three. You know what I mean? You got to go, you know, like, one plus eight minus six. You know, it's like kind of a weird thing. So you just got to keep chipping away and hopefully certain things kind of align with the hard work and the quality of the music is also, you know, it's right place, right time stuff a lot of the times. You've got to put yourself in situations.
Well, that's true. I think, you know, you've said it all, like a pro, which is why you're where you are. You know, it is quality of music, quality of performance, appreciating the audience, no matter who's there, how many. You know, I'm an entertainment publicist as well as, you know, I've got a jazz combo. And I understand when people, I've heard other people say, well, it doesn't really matter how we sound. There's hardly anybody there. I go, okay, first of all, somebody is there. Okay, even if there's only three or four people at a gig, you know, they got dressed and got in their car and spent gasoline and spent time to come and see you. And they didn't have to. You know, they got 50,000 channels on TV or SiriusXM, Spotify. They could just sit at home and be entertained. But they came to see you. You know, give them the best you can do, because, first of all, if you do good, they'll tell their friends. And if you do bad, they'll tell everybody. But also, you're right. You never know. There's never any particular way. And it can sometimes be right place, right time. And if I can't tell you how many people who have been on this show, some of them people I mentioned earlier, like Mike Vitale, if it hadn't been for, I think, Ted Nugent walking into a bar and seeing him play and pulling him out, you know, to play with him, and then that got his career going. Or
right.
Yeah, same thing with, I don't know if you know, do you know Chasm Sultan, who plays with Utopia, Todd Rundgren?
Oh, yeah.
Oyster Cult, Joan Jett, yeah. Yeah, okay, so Chasm's a bass player, and he said, you know, I think he was in Long Island gigging somewhere at playing for someone, and somebody said, hey, Todd Rundgren's looking for a bass player. Do you want to audition? You know, and he got on the bus, went up there, changed his life, you know, everything. You never know who's around.
Yeah, and I think another thing that is important is kind of staying in it. You know what I mean? Like, not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you meet so many talented people who, you know, they kind of maybe quit before they. You know, you just kind of, like, if you really believe in what you're doing, and if you're really an artist, it's kind of important to keep creating, and you never know where it's going to go.
Yeah, that's true, and you're right. You never know. I mean, and it's like I've told some people that stop. You know, some people think, oh, I'm going to start off big, and they don't want to go through the real work to get you somewhere. But I totally agree with you, Mike. And I've told, and if you stop, if you just give up, I have a belief, and I have my own theory that if you have something in your soul like this to do, like you played guitar, I don't know how many instruments you play, but I'm guessing you play more than guitar. You're a songwriter. You're a singer. You're a performer. I think if you have the talent and the gift and enjoy doing this and you stop, I really believe that a part of someone's soul starts to wither. I know that sounds kind of heavy. But I think if you have that in you, yeah, it makes a difference. Whether you write or paint or play music or build things or create things, I think there's just something that, you know, you were meant to do that's your heart's desire and the plan for you. And you guys, apparently, you've got the right combination, and it does make a combination. You know, you have to all get along. You're going to, you probably sometimes, I don't know, I can imagine you all get along, and then maybe now and then kind of a little brotherly spat and then having fun. But it takes a combination, and I think you do have. And this is why, and it's just, what, 4 years, you guys are have got the career you've got because of your attitudes and your persistence and the wisdom you're sharing in it. I have got a song, Run Right to You. Tell us about that. Is that something, is that, you just put that out or is it coming new?
Yeah, this is our latest, it's the latest song that we released, and
it really turned a corner for us.
You know, we've put a few records out of original songs, and we're kind of in the process of making our really third album of real full album of original stuff. And we had this song, and we really liked it, and we were, you know, we decided to just release it as a single. And it's been kind of strange because I feel like this one song has kind of done more for our careers than maybe whole records have. So it goes to show you what's going on with the music industry, and it's been pretty unique for us in that way. And so we're real proud of it. It's a song about, you know, kind of the stuff we talked about, which is just getting out there and doing it and not giving up sometimes. And it's got a quality. It's got a quality about love. It's got a New York City is definitely in the attitude of it. And we wanted to really make a real rock and roll song. And it's called Run Right to You.
Oh, yeah, and this is one of my favorite. This is one of my favorite songs of yours. I've been playing it every day lately. And so,
thank you.
Yeah. Let's hit it now. Run Right to You. Light a howling sun, I'll be right up on your back. what rock and roll is supposed to sound like. Run right to you, Hollis Brown. And I noticed that has got over 97,000 views already, the official video of it, on YouTube. That's not too shabby.
Yeah. Yeah, we got lucky with that one. Yeah. Well, you know, we put that out and we got on a cool rock playlist. You know, I think the big thing with today's stuff is getting on playlists. You know, whether it's Spotify,
The
streams up, or YouTube to get the views up. So we got on a really good playlist, and it really did help us. Plus, we had some friends, you know, getting friends to share it, and really, it's all community based kind of thing. So we've been doing it some time. So we've got it, yeah.
Let me ask you this. Oh, by the way, I was going to say, if you want to talk to Mike Montali of Hollis Brown, you can call in 646-716-9922. That's 646-716-9922. It is a toll-free call in the continental U.S. And I'm waiting for you right now. Before I bring this call, I just want to say, you know, I know sometimes people don't like to be compared to people, but when I first heard that song with the groove, one of the things I like about Run Right to You is you feel it. You feel like you're right there with the energy. You can feel that. If you've ever been to New York, you can feel it. You can feel the air, the atmosphere, the streets running. And there's things in it like, I'm going to change my clothes, going to meet you in the city. You know, you talk to this guy, he's like getting off work, and I'm going to change because this is a special. I'm going to change my, you know, I'm going to get dressed for the night. I'm going to meet you. We're going to say, this is planned. This is going to be the night. And then I'm going to play it for you. Got a song, I'm going to play it for you. You feel like you're almost a voyeur or running with this person, you know, getting ready. But do you also wonder, are you fans or have you ever listened to Eric Burdon and the Animals?
Of course. Oh, yeah. Really?
You're
the first person
to
ever
Burdon
say
that,
actually. You are the first person to ever Yeah, I've never gotten that before. I've gotten a lot of different people, but never the Animals. Great, great, amazing band, you know. Love that band.
Good, because I do too. Because you always want to be sensitive to somebody, but if I tell them it sounds like this and they don't like, but I really had a good feel if there's just a raw young Eric Burdon and the Animals in there. So, yeah.
Wow.
We have
go back
a call.
And
here we have.
Now.
Really? We have Duffy Odom. You're calling in from Adel, Georgia. Hey, Duffy. You're on the air with Matt Perry. He's one of our regular callers. Hey, and with Mike Montali.
Hello, Mike.
Hey, Duffy, how you doing?
Pretty good. I love your sound. I love, I've listened to several of your albums over and over in a playlist, mostly on Amazon Music, and every cut is just masterful. You have a maturity that's, knowledge of what you do is just solid. It's great stuff, and I think it's I'll be amazed if you don't go very far with it. It's just it's great, and it makes me dance around the apartment.
All right, that's good thing.
It's great stuff, you know. And
you know, some
and
songs
I can
make
hear,
you cry. Some songs that make you cry.
Yeah.
If you can make it dance, that's a good thing, you know.
Yeah. And, I mean, everything about it, your lyrics, and I know you've had other people written songs for other great people, and a lot of people, a lot of important people like yourself, putting you in film, and you can tell your influences must be from some of the great people that you've listened to probably growing up. And there's a couple of things about that that is so interesting when I read about you. I read an article that was in Berg magazine online, and it talks about a couple of things. One thing was how you and John, and correct me if I'm wrong, were kind of obsessed with the Velvet Underground Loaded album, and I listened to your versions of those songs, and you just add so much to it. You don't take anything away from it, but you enhance it like a tribute is supposed to. And I noticed that the tracks are exactly the same as the album, but backwards.
That's right. Well, thank you for the kind words. I really appreciate it.
I haven't listened to that album in a long time, and I went back and listened to it, and it's just amazing what you did with it.
Thanks. Yeah, you know, that record was one of the first records that me and John really bonded over. You know, we both came from, we'd known each other in high school for a couple of years, but we were coming from different places. And then we both went away to college for 1 year, and we both said, you know, we really should be in New York trying to start a band and make music. So we came back, and we were kind of the only other people that were into trying that idea. So we kind of fell in with each other, and that was one of the first real records we bonded over. It was kind of like Ziggy Stardust was one, the Velvet Underground Loaded record was another one, and Frank Zappa, I think, was another one, Freak Out. And those three records,
yeah,
we listened to over and over, and we said, you know, we got to write songs like this. And we always joked about doing the Loaded record in its entirety as like a surprise show, just maybe like as an encore or something at one of our shows, just like come out and get a whole Loaded record. We never got a chance to do it, you know. We never got a chance to do it. But Lou Reed wound up passing away. He was a big New York songwriter, and we got invited to be a part of this tribute that they were doing for him. And so everybody was doing one song, you know, like a couple of really, really famous artists. Everybody was doing one song, and we just said, "Screw it, let's just get the whole Loaded record and we'll just do it," you know, And we wound up going, you know, and this is something we were talking about before, is that it ran so late, there were so many artists, and we wound up going on last, which was about 2 in the morning, it was like a Monday night or something, and, you know, there was maybe 25 people there, but we did the whole record.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, everybody kind of left, and we did the whole record, but you know what, the next day, for some reason, it was written about in a lot of different places, you know, like Rolling Stone wrote about it, or like Spin Magazine wrote about it. And so we got a call from our label, Alive Records at the time, who we just put our first record out, and we got a call from them and said, "Hey, since you guys know the songs and you're getting a little buzz, maybe you could just go in the studio and record these songs, and we'll do a fun like Record Store Day release, just like a niche release." So we did it, and we said, "Absolutely, let's go." So we went in the studio, we did the whole thing in 2 days, the whole entire record. All live, and we put it out, and it was supposed to be only 500 copies printed up total, just like a real small low-key release. It was like a niche kind of one-off pressing just for fun for Record Store Day, just to have, you know, just keep putting music out, and it sold out, and we keep pressing it up, so it's probably become our most successful thing we've done, and we can't escape it now. Everywhere we go, someone's
You're gonna do the whole album.
So, we can't escape it. But you know, that's part of the history of our band and how we came together. And the songs on that record are so good. So, thanks for listening. You know?
Oh yeah, it's great. And the other thing is the Bo Diddley connection. How did that happen? That's an amazing story. And you ended up playing, was it his actual square, red square guitar?
Yeah, so the Bo Diddley thing.
I grew up a long time ago. I'm from the pre-Bo Diddley days. And,
the early
Bo
rockers.
Bo Diddley was a favorite of everybody loved Bo Diddley. And song you do that nobody had ever heard before, that is amazing. What a great song that is.
Song came about, John is actually a really, really big Bo Diddley fan, more than, like a very, very big fan. John, the guitar player in our band, and we played a show in New Jersey, and it was a house concert called Live at Drew's, and it's a pretty big house concert series that a friend of ours named Drew Ekman runs, and we were doing a show, and the head of the Bo Diddley estate came, and her name is Margo Lewis, and she was Bo Diddley's organ player for 30 years and manager, and she just came to see us.
Whoa!
And after the show, we got to do, we played for like 2 hours, and then after the show, we got to talking, and she's a very nice lady, and she said, I'm so and so, and so immediately John was like, a beat of honey, kind of. So he hung up on her, and they just got to talking, got to talking about all these stories and stuff. And I was kind of, had to do other things. Sometimes when I get off stage, it's a little like crazy, so I got to like do other stuff. But he was talking to her, and they got around to where she had said that she had some unfinished material that Bo Diddley was working on before, in a vault somewhere. And so he got the courage to, say, hey, can I hear some of it? And, we thought that this would never happen. But then, I kept in touch, and a few months of, prodding, saying, hey, can you send us some stuff? We really have to hear this stuff. And eventually we just got an email with, like, this lo-fi recording of some instrumental track when Bo Diddley, was working on, and we were just like, wow, like, nobody's ever heard this before. This is unbelievable. We were actually on the tour. And we let him listen to it and backstage one day, just like, hey, check this out. And, we were all like geeking out over it. And so John, to his credit, got the guts to say, hey, this is not finished, but maybe we can finish this and try and have a release of some kind. And it's something that I think the estate has been thinking about doing for a long time. Apparently there's a lot of these songs, and they're looking maybe for artists down the road to finish them for a compilation or something of some kind. I don't know exactly, but I felt like we were a little bit of a guinea pig. And so they said, sure, let's do it. So we kind of got in the studio with them, and we recorded it all in one day in Brooklyn. And on the track that you hear on the final thing, Rain Dance, it's Bo Diddley. He's playing guitar on the song. That chugging guitar is.
One place it said featuring Bo Diddley, and I wondered.
Yeah, he's actually on the track.
Where he was on there.
Really amazing.
Oh,
songwriter and a fan of the blues and a fan of, authentic kind of inspirational, innovative music. And for us, it was just mind blowing. And then we debuted this song at the House of Blues in New Orleans. And I got to wear the square guitar, the red one, the red Bo Diddley square guitar. And John got a chance to wear the other guitar, which is ZZ Top's guitar. What was the guy's name? I can't remember his name right now. You know who it is, don't you?
Yeah.
Now that you can't think of it, but yeah.
Yeah, he has a model of the guitar. It's not a Bo Diddley square. It's like a different variation. So John got to wear that one, and I got to wear the Bo Diddley one.
Is it
really,
like a
really
V
cool.
or something? He played a V guitar.
It's kind of an odd shaped thing. You could look it up. It's pretty cool. And so John was playing that one, and it was really amazing. Billy Gibbons.
Oh, yeah.
Billy Gibbons.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was really
kind of an incredible journey to create that song, and really a once-in-a-lifetime kind of collaboration for us, especially, you know, as an artist that we had one record out at the time, and we weren't, like, you know, we had a decent following in Europe, but not, like, you know, just really starting out, and this is a couple of years ago, and right after our first record came out, so for them to really trust us and think we could do justice was just a huge nod and a huge honor to try and fill those shoes, you know, but we couldn't pass it up, you know?
Yeah, it's
oh my gosh, no,
it's like providential. It's too synchronistic to have just. I mean, you feel like Bo Diddley came down and put his finger on you or something. You know, it's just an amazing event, and the song is so good. The song is just.
Thank you.
Rain Dance is just really, really good. The lyrics and the arrangement and that Bo Diddley feel.
You must have planted this call. You must have planted this call. It's too nice. You know, I was worried to be a heckler on the front of the line, you know? Somebody's going to get out of
line. No, actually, let me tell you, Duffy's a regular, and sometimes he co-hosts with me. I've known him a long time. He's he's been a long-time actor in Atlanta. In fact, he did a couple of seasons on as co-host with the show with Fred Willard on Comedy Central. So he can be funny, but he is totally legit here, okay? Completely
amazing.
Legit here. So.
I know some things. I know what I'm talking about when I talk about it, otherwise I don't talk about it. I don't know. Most of the time I don't open my mouth unless I'm enthralled.
So let me ask, sorry to interrupt you, Duffy. I'm sorry, hon, but let me say,
go ahead.
I agree with you too. I would think that if there's ever any time that you ever, I was thinking about Providence, if there was ever any time when you thought, am I doing the right thing? I think this will be where you, okay, I'm in the right place. I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing because here I am, you know.
That's right.
Doing a song with Bo Diddley, so.
That's something that will always hold close, you know, it's something that happens. So it's pretty, you know, like I was saying, like it seems, you know, when you're living day to day and you're living in the moment, sometimes you're, you know, you're working on the next artistic thing or you're working on the next chapter or the next page or whatever, and you know, it's, when you hear people say some of the things they've gotten to do, it's almost kind of surreal up there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's magnificent.
And every album has a different feel to it. It's almost like they're almost like concept albums.
We've been trying to do that intentionally. We've been trying to grow, and I think the next record is going to have some different flavor also, because we've never been, our whole thing is writing great songs. That's hopefully the thing that you know, binds all the records together. But we're always chasing something, I think, as individuals and collectively as artists. You know, we never wanted to be a band like AC/DC, which is my first concert, by the way, at Madison Square Garden. Unbelievable. But we never wanted to be a band that just made the same record over and over and over and over. You know what I mean? It's not fun for us. And I think we have a little bit of a versatility that we can showcase, especially because we're a band that really plays our instruments, and we can go like a rock route. We can do an Americana roots kind of thing. We can take it a little country. We can take it more R&B. We can kind of float around all the great kind of, you know, the blues, all the basis of all the great American kind of music. So I think it's a journey for us to try and also the recording process, you know, we want to get better at it and elevate ourselves and make better sound. You know, like the first record we made is, I like all the records we made for different reasons, but I think that that's why I like them, because they're all a little different and we're done differently and different kind of songs and just really trying to grow and stretch and not just settle like, hey, we can kind of put this kind of Americana song together pretty easy. Let's just keep doing that and bank on it, you know? Like,
yeah.
I don't know. That just seems like it doesn't interest me.
You can you can kind of tell that when you, I noticed that when I was listening to Three Shots, it's got that same kind of, I don't know, American kind of only in America type sound to it. And you talk about Death of an Actress and with John Wayne, and then you've got Rain Dance, of course, in there, and Wait for Me, Virginia. It's got a great feel to it. And then you listen to Ride on the Train, and it's you're taking us in another direction entirely, and they're kind of like little movie-like things.
I was about to say, like little vignettes or short
different
films.
Stories.
Because
it's really good, really
good.
Because
that's how I feel when I listen to Run Right to You. You know, I feel like that's a thing. And then this guy is, you feel every emotion because he can't wait to get off work and change, get to the city, and he's going to play this. And just the feel, this is coming from his heart. Yeah, I think that's, do you feel like that's one reason why you're so popular? Because you make people feel something. You make them feel that they're watching, that they've got an intimate moment with you. Or maybe some of the things
I agree with
definitely
that,
see.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And some of the things that you write about, yeah, and the way they sing it, that people feel like you're here, you're telling their story.
Yeah, you know, I think connection is important in any kind of way, you know, And I've as a lyricist, have always been, you know, I always wanted to be a writer ever since I was young, whether it be, I would write like poetry or short stories or plays, and it seemed like I wasn't very good at those other kind of things, but I could write, whenever I would write a song, you know, it kind of had a little story to it that kind of came off a little better than some of the other stuff I was working. So it's an outlet that I kept working toward, because I was like, hey, maybe I can actually write a good song one of these days. And so I think the songs that I have, lyrically anyway, you know, they're all kind of stories, and some are more personal than others, but I always, especially on the Three Shots record, I always wanted the songs to be about something, you know what I mean? And I think that that's very important. You know, a lot of times, especially in pop music today, you just get like filler lines of just, you know.
And everybody wants them to do something like they did, you know, do another one like you did this one, you know.
And people who have supported us just maybe taking a chance, you know. I think we've kind of worked on our audience a little bit to maybe give us a little leeway to not, you know, expect what's happening next in a way. And so I think that's kind of important. Like, a lot of my favorite artists have all kind of done that. You know, like, look at Neil Young. I mean, that guy has made so many bad records.
Crazy.
But you know what? He just goes for it, and he's unapologetic, and whatever he's feeling, he creates. And sometimes it's the most amazing music you've ever heard, and sometimes you can't get through a minute of the song, you know? But that's, you know. So I think, not that we want to be a band where people can't get through the middle of our song, but I think, you know, there's something to be said about just being authentic and trying to write what you want to say, and people maybe respond to that and connect to it, hopefully, you know.
Because
I'm not sitting down writing a song thinking, oh, how can I get this lyric on this TV show? Or how can I get a lyric that's going to, like, be relatable?
Yeah, you can tell that.
I try and just
write
about something I'm feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he's got a great potential to be one of the great lyricists of the age. It's just each one is so well thought out, you know. I think about reading, first time I read W.H. Auden in a collection, it was like, it's so well thought out, and I think kind of in the same way, and like with Bob Dylan, you get a flow that's an entire experience, and you feel like you've been on a journey.
Absolutely, yeah. A lot of those songs, yeah, for sure.
And, you know, also, I'm lucky because the band is so good, you know. The band I'm in is really good, and we take it up a notch. You know, if I bring a song, it's just taken up a notch by the band, you know. I really believe that, so.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, we've only got a few minutes left with you, and actually, I've been quiet over here, not because I've enjoyed listening to you guys, but also I was trying to download Rain Dance to play, but I just couldn't get it going here. However, you've got some other things coming up. You got the West Coast tour and so forth. Tell us what's happening soon. So.
Yeah, we got a bunch of shows.
People can know when you're
going to
come to
that. Yeah, we're playing up in Providence. I think the show is sold out. We're opening for a really amazing band called Deer Tick. And then we travel across the country, do a bunch of West Coast dates. And then we're going to take the month of August and the month of September and really get in the studio and really work out some brand new material. So hopefully by the end of October, we're like have a new record and we're starting to plan for next year where we can get on the road again and bring some new music and a new show and a new push and just keep on doing it. So I think recording, it's been too long. You know, it's been a little while, and we're all getting the itch to get some new music down. So I think that's what's next for us, really. So we're excited about it.
So, all right, so when are you going to come down south to Atlanta,
yeah,
to Asheville, to
and
Florida?
Just in Decatur. We just played in Decatur too long ago, actually. Probably in May. I think we played in Decatur in May. Yeah, we did the Decatur Arts Festival.
Okay, now I'm upset.
And
and
I think and then we did a in office show for something called Six Man. I don't know if you know what that is in Atlanta.
Yes,
they
I do
a lot
I
of.
Do.
The,
uh-huh.
Yeah, so we got some
cruises
that too long
and stuff.
Ago. Yeah, they do like the cool cruises and the rock and roll cruises and stuff. So we went down there and so we were just in Atlanta maybe first week of June, I think, something like that. We'll be back.
All right.
We'll come back around.
Oh, good.
We got, okay. And don't forget North Carolina, Florida, Alabama. You know, we all love music down here in the South, so.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we can get to, we can get there. In the Southeast, we can we'll get there.
Okay, so. So watch out for Hollis Brown. You know, I've got their website and all their social media contacts on mine. Anything that's Madam Perry's, I've got, you know, I'll put you guys on the Instagram, the Twitter, Facebook, everything I've got, I'll put you on, and we'll share all of your, every way to contact you guys and know where you're playing.
So
let me do a shout out to everybody. Because I'm so happy to be talking to Mike Mentale here, but I also want to shout out, send some love to Jonathan Bonilla and Andrew Zanal, Adam Bach, Brian Courage. You guys can come back on next time. You, there will be a next time, Hollis Brown, because
really
got started.
Absolutely.
All right. And this is something
that went quick.
Never, ever, ever done. So, yeah, dude.
Yeah.
Well, that's what Cindy said when she was on. She goes, that was so fast. I've never done this before, but since I don't have the other song loaded up, I'm gonna go out with just a bit of Run Right to You, and why not? It's a great song. Hollis Brown, give them your website address.
Yeah, hollisbrown.com. You follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. We're everywhere. So just check us out, Hollis Brown. Keep an eye out for us. We'll be coming to town soon.
Great.
I like it. HollisBrown.com. Look it up. It can't be easier, and you'll see it on all of my social media, too.